You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 370 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, coming to you live deep into the night on this Friday into Saturday morning. The Atlanta Hawks were in action this evening in the nation's capital and actually came away with an upset victory by a final score of 103-97 over the Washington Wizards. Plenty to get to on that particular game, but before we get to the actual contest, sort of the headliner for this show outside of the game is the fact that there was a report circulating on Friday afternoon from Gary Wolfel of the Racine Times Journal up there in Wisconsin. Gary is apparently quite close to the Milwaukee Bucks situation, and he reported that Mike Budenholzer, along with a couple of other head coaches, including Doc Rivers, have some interest in the Milwaukee Bucks coaching vacancy. As you might remember, if you're not a super dialed in the rest of the NBA, but you may not know this, but Jason Kidd, who was the head coach of the Bucks, was fired a couple of months ago. Has been replaced by Joe Prunty, who is the interim coach. But all indications are Prunty will get an interview, I'm sure, with the Bucks. But they'll be conducting a full-scale search to coach that team moving forward. And, of course, they have Giannis Antetokounmpo in the middle of everything. So that's a job that's in very much high demand at this point in time. The report from Wolfel indicates that, quote, multiple sources, end quote, say that Mike Budenholzer has, quote, more than a passing interest, end quote, in the Bucks opening, and that he also does not want to be part of the extensive rebuild in Atlanta. That was a direct quote from Wolfel's piece. Nothing is terribly surprising in there, and I will say my guard is up a little bit on this report just because it's one source. It's not one of the super prominent national sources that you would follow. This is not some random blogger though. This is a newspaper guy from Milwaukee that's been plugged in, been right in the past on some stuff with the Bucks. So let's just keep that with a grain. It's sort of a grain of salt kind of reporting, but at the same time, it's definitely interesting to consider only because it does make some sense in a lot of ways. You know, obviously, a lot of coaches in the NBA, even ones that already have jobs, will be very interested in the Milwaukee job because of the fact that Giannis comes along with that particular position. He's signed long term, and one of the best 10 players in the league right now. That's still very young, and everybody will want to coach him, obviously. So and obviously. Also throw in the considerations with Budenholzer that are specific to his situation in Atlanta. You know, he formerly had all the power with the Hawks. That power was stripped from him. Obviously, he's still a very, very good basketball coach. I will go out on a limb there and say that he's easily an above-average coach, probably a top 10-ish kind of guy in the entire league. So if you're a Hawks fan, you probably don't want to be losing Mike Budenholzer, but at the same time, it does make some sense because, Travis Schlenk was not the one that hired Mike Budenholzer. I'm not sure what that relationship looks like or if it's even bad, but if you're Bud, you might want to get out sooner rather than later if you have a positive opportunity. I don't think Bud's going to just leave without another job, and I don't think the Hawks are going to fire Bud. At the same time, it does make sense if you were Budenholzer to evaluate some other options, and Milwaukee would be one of the higher-end ones that is available. So just want to put that out there. Obviously, a lot to unpack when it comes to Budenholzer potentially hitting the market. I think if you're a Hawks fan, you want Budenholzer to stay because he's probably the best coach you can get. There's a couple of other guys in the market. I guess David Fizdale will be interesting in that way, but more likely than not, if you let Bud go out the door, you're probably going to replace him with someone that's not quite as good because, you know, guys who are top 10 or 12 coaches in the league don't grow on trees. Budenholzer has strengths, weaknesses, like everybody else does. You know, there's some things that have driven me crazy about Bud over the years as a coach. But, you know, in terms of the overall package, I think he's definitely an above-average guy that you would want on the bench. And while I had all kinds of qualms with the way that he was the GM of the team when he and Wes Wilcox were the duo there in charge, I did not love the personnel direction. But in terms of just pure coaching, which is the current role that he's in, I'm a fan of Budenholzer, to be sure. And I think that would be a situation where the Hawks would be Not necessarily in a better position if he were to leave. Obviously, I can't blame him necessarily because of the fact that Milwaukee is a pretty appetizing job. But a lot to get to, obviously, on that, and we'll cover that in the coming days. If anything else comes out on that, I would not expect too much to come out in the next couple of weeks. But you know, if something happens, it probably will happen sometime during something during and after when Milwaukee exits the playoffs. And with the way that they're shaping up right now, that could be a first round series loss. So that job could be actually technically available as of early May. So not too long from now, and we'll keep an eye on Mike Budenholzer in that way. Moving on to the game, though, on Friday night, as we it was the original topic of the podcast, and the Hawks were 10.5-point underdogs on the road in D.C., but in typical Washington Wizards fashion, they fell flat in this spot, basically just falling apart in the fourth quarter. It looked for all the world as if Washington was going to win this game late. They had pretty significant control in the later stages of the fourth quarter, but the Wizards did not score for almost 5 minutes of clock time from about the six-minute mark down to the one-minute mark of the game, and by the time they actually got, made another dent in the scoreboard, the Hawks had done enough to run away with the victory. So at the outset, a bit of a surprise. DeAndre Bembry got the start at the two in place of Damian Lee. Damian Lee did play in this game. We'll talk about that, of course, in a little bit. But Bembry getting the start, I had no problem with that. It was a little bit surprising because it just hasn't happened much. But after he had the night off 2 days ago, after the on the second night of a back-to-back, the Hawks were obviously taking care of him a little bit. But Bembry, he's still, for me, a better asset than a lot of the sort of more peripheral guys that the Hawks have on the roster, whether it be Lee or Cleveland or Jalen Morris. I think Bembry's still a little bit better asset than those guys are, if only because he's going to be on the team next year for sure and with a guaranteed contract. But it's one of those things where Bembry had some highs and lows in this game. We'll talk about him in a little bit. That was a little bit of a surprise, though, and that happened off the top. Markieff Morris, you might remember him from his dust-ups with Paul Millsap last year in the playoffs. The Wizards veteran power forward was ejected in the first quarter of this game. Not often that you see a first quarter ejection, but that actually took place there. And it was sort of fitting in the first quarter. It was pretty ugly offensively on both sides in that first quarter, with an 84 offensive rating for the Hawks, but only an 88 offensive rating for the Wizards. It was sort of a rock fight. It was 22-21 at the end of the first quarter. The second quarter was much more kind to the Hawks. It was a 13-0 run involved with Atlanta in that second quarter. Took a 10-point lead there after a Dwayne Dedmon dunk and a John Collins bucket around the rim. From there, though, the Wizards came back and scored the final 7 points of the half, and the Hawks only took a 4-point advantage into halftime. The second half was definitely more back and forth. The Hawks pushed it back to 10, sort of in the mid stages of the third quarter, but the Wizards tied it. It was back and forth. Big early swing there early in the fourth quarter as DeAndre Bembry missed both of his free throws, followed by Otto Porter three-pointer. I made note of that as sort of a potential pivot point. And then with 7 minutes to go, Bradley Beal hit a three, and the Wizards were on a 7-0 run. And that's the point where I definitely thought this game was going to be over in favor of Washington. But, credit to the Hawks coming back, fighting the entire way down the stretch. And the biggest shot of the night, in my opinion, was a Mike Muscala three with about 2 minutes to go. Put the Hawks up by two, and then from that point forward, then they never trailed. So, an up and down performance to be sure for the Hawks, but on the whole, a 6-point win on the road against a team that's better than you is pretty impressive. Even if the Wizards did not have John Wall in this game, which they did not, but as you might remember, if you're an NBA fan, the Wizards were actually playing better early on in the season without John Wall, who's missed about a half season this year, and it was a lot of Thomas Satoransky, but. The Hawks just made enough plays in this spot, got enough stops defensively, especially with a 98.2 defensive rating against the Wizards. Only Bradley Beal had 32 points, but aside from that, there wasn't a whole lot of offense going on from the Wizards, and the Hawks just did enough offensively to hold them off in the final seconds and get this victory. So, obviously, plenty to get to about this game, but before we actually do that, I wanted to remind you guys to subscribe to the podcast. I really appreciate everyone that's already done that, but please tell your friends. You can also unsubscribe and then resubscribe. I've been told that does wonders for all the formulas and stuff on the back end, so please go ahead and do that. Leave some feedback if you have not done that already as well, some positive reviews and ratings, all that fun stuff that really can help us in a big way. And the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network is also sort of launching on the baseball side. The NFL side's been around for a while. There'll be a Locked On Braves show in the near future. If you're a Braves fan, I know a lot of our crossover fans will be listening to that as well, so check that out. And one of those things where there's plenty to consume on the Locked On Podcast Network, including this podcast. So tell your friends, check it out, and I really appreciate that. Moving on to the player portion of the podcast, as we always do here, we'll start with the bench in this particular game. That means Tyler Dorsey, a career-high 22 points for Dorsey on 7 of 14 shooting, 4 of 8 from the free throw line, 4 of 8 from 3, 4 of 4 from the free throw line, and 3 rebounds for Dorsey in this game. He was a plus 20. He was the only player on the Hawks roster that was more than a plus 13. That's not all Dorsey, obviously, but this is probably the best game of his career, frankly. He made a bunch of big shots. A lot of them were uncontested in terms of the catch-and-shoot stuff as a three-point shooter, but for Dorsey to be that efficient is very encouraging defensively. He's always going to have some problems. I think my guard is up in terms of Dorsey being a quality defensive player in the NBA, but if he's going to shoot like that, he definitely has a place off of the bench. I've been pretty disappointed with Dorsey for a while now, but it was nice to see him play well in this game. He certainly did, and without his contributions, the Hawks definitely would not have won this game on the road, and that's very encouraging also because rookies don't usually play well on the road necessarily, especially in high-level environments, and he played well in this game. Moving on to the rest of the bench, Mike Muscala, 24 minutes of playing time, 7 points, 9 rebounds. He was a plus 6 off the bench. I thought Muscala was quite good. I mentioned before he hit what I think was the biggest shot of the night, in my opinion. And beyond that, just was very solid. Outplayed a lot of the front court players from Washington when he was in the game. Damian Lee, coming off the bench in this spot instead of starting, but 26 minutes, 11 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists. He's not shy as a shooter, although his shot attempts actually went down a little bit in this game. Only 9 attempts in 26 minutes. 1 of 5 from 3, but a couple of really, really aggressive shots in the first half in I guess what is now typical Damian Lee fashion, but I think he played pretty well off the bench. Antonius Cleveland, only 9 minutes, but 3 points off the bench. He and Miles Plumlee were basically the peripheral guys that did not play in the second half. This is essentially an 8-man rotation in the second half of this game, but Cleveland and Plumlee, 9 minutes each, didn't really have standout performances in either way. We can move on to the starting 5 in this game. I mentioned before, DeAndre Bembry got the start. Only 17 minutes, remember, the Hawks had a very, very short leash with him in terms of minutes. If you might remember, before the game that he rested on the second night of a back-to-back, he only played 17 minutes as well, and 17 minutes in this game. I'm not sure if that was an artificial ceiling on his playing time. But Bembry had a couple of highs and lows here. I thought he had a very, very electric pass and a very nice, looking three pointer by his standards. Also had a couple of really good defensive plays and had a highlight worthy block in this spot. But did have 3 turnovers, had some highs and lows, and as he's prone to do. I still like his game, but definitely some too much mistakes, and his handle was a little bit too loose for me at this point in time. Isaiah Taylor, 3 of 10 from the floor, 10 points, 4 assists, 2 steals, and 4 turnovers in 25 minutes for Taylor. Played a little bit less than you would think, given the fact he was the only point guard on the roster. All the guys in Erie were in Erie for this game. And in fact, the BayHawks season is now over as they lost on Friday night in the G League Conference Final. So they're now out, and I expect those guys to return, whether that be Josh Paget, Andrew White, Tyler Cavanaugh. All those guys should be on their way back to Atlanta in the short order here to finish out the season. But at the same time, something to monitor there because Taylor didn't play a whole lot in this game. I thought he was just fine. Wasn't great by any stretch of the imagination. Wasn't bad either. It was just kind of out there for the most part. Dwight Dedmon had a nice game, 12 points, 14 rebounds in 32 minutes. He had the second best plus minus on the team, was a plus 13 in his 32 minutes, and I thought Dedmon was definitely a force to be reckoned with around the rim. Did miss his only 3-point attempt in this game, but it didn't matter. He was very efficient and very effective and really outplayed Marcin Gortat in a big way. John Collins had an excellent game, I thought, 10 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists. He was better in the first half, to be sure, but at the same time, a lot of the passing was sort of what jumped off the page to me. A couple of really, really high-level basketball IQ passes. I like to see Collins be more involved offensively in the second half of the games. I feel like I'm a broken record in saying that. I feel like I say it all the time, but I thought he was very, very good in the first half. Did slow down a little bit after halftime. Obviously, you could see that in the numbers, but his passing acumen and his basketball IQ continued to impress me as a rookie, to be sure. And then finally, Torian Prince led the team with 23 points, 5 assists, 4 rebounds, 2 steals. Did foul out in 34 minutes. Was 8 of 18 from the floor, 1 of 7 from 3. Nice to see him, though, contributing in a lot of different ways, even though he was not shooting the ball well. When Prince has shot well, he's always been playing well recently. When he doesn't shoot well, that's not always the case. But he didn't have the jumper work in this game, but managed to do enough off the dribble and with some facilitation stuff to make a positive impact. So 23 points again for Prince. I thought he played very well. And as a whole, the Hawks, 48% from the floor, 33% from 3. Nothing terribly special, 18 turnovers, but managed to score to 104.3 points per 100 possessions clip. That's not great, but it was enough to get a win in the spot. Free throw shooting was a problem. They missed 7 free throws, but I thought the Hawks played pretty darn well here, considering their available roster versus the available roster of the Wizards, even without John Wall. This is a spot where the Hawks are supposed to lose, and they didn't do that. So shouts to the Hawks for coming out and playing well and getting a win on the road. As I mentioned before, Erie's out of it, so we'll have plenty of reinforcements coming. The Hawks will not have a short bench in those final 2 games. I can't imagine that anything but all those guys being back. Tyler Cavanaugh was pretty bad here in the game that Erie lost tonight, but one of those things where Josh Jett played well. Andrew White had a couple of nice moments, but Cavanaugh really ugly recently. In fact, I sort of mentioned this tongue-in-cheek during the game. Earlier in the week when I was at the home game on Wednesday, but Cavanaugh's fallen off really fast. A lot of the injury stuff, I'm sure, had something to do with it, but there was a time where a lot of Hawks fans were really excited about his work, and since then, things have gone in a south direction for Cavanaugh. Obviously, he's still locked up for the rest of the season and into next year if the Hawks want to keep him, but that is no longer a lock by any stretch of the imagination, if it ever was, but it's certainly not looking like he's somebody I'd be projecting for the Hawks to hold on to necessarily for very long. At any rate, that's going to do it for in terms of the Hawks portion of the program. As I am currently recording this, we are approaching 1 a.m. on the East Coast, but the Minnesota Timberwolves and Los Angeles Lakers are still playing. So one of those things, well, that'll be a point of interest for the Hawks, obviously. The Wolves need to win that game for the Hawks to secure that playoff spot. For Minnesota to secure the playoff spot, for the Hawks to secure that draft spot. And that's something we'll talk about again when we have our next podcast on Monday, but that's something to monitor. And in terms of the Hawks getting a win here, I know a lot of people would be frustrated by that particular result. But on the bright side, quote unquote, the Grizzlies lost on Friday evening, so the win that the Hawks got will not burn them as long as they don't win any more games. The Hawks have two more games. If they were to win another one, they can get in some trouble in terms of the ping pong ball race. And while the schedule looks difficult on paper, they have Boston on Sunday and then Philadelphia on Tuesday. Those are two teams that could be resting guys. Boston rested basically everyone on Friday night. They are very shorthanded right now. Tuesday, if you're a Hawks fan, you're hoping that Philly needs to play for something on that Tuesday game, because if they don't, that could be a shorthanded Sixers team coming into Atlanta in the finale. So with all that said, plenty to get to on this podcast. I'm sure I'm borderline incoherent at this point in time. It's pretty late into the evening, but the Hawks got a win, and plenty to look forward to over the last two games of the season. So the Hawks are in Boston on Sunday afternoon. I will have a podcast after that. It will be up either on Sunday afternoon, evening, or at the very least by Monday morning. We'll be back with a recap of that game, as well as some more information on what's transpiring with the Minnesota Timberwolves and the draft pick, all that fun stuff. So please stay tuned for that podcast. I really appreciate it. Again, please subscribe to the show. Tell your friends and check us out on Twitter and on Facebook, and check me out on Twitter at BT Roll if you want to check out my ramblings and musings across the sports world. So thanks as always for listening, everybody. We'll see you guys later on in the week.